Immersive cultural enrichment on board and on shore. Freshly prepared regional cuisine. Viking sails the rivers of the world and takes travelers to the heart of iconic destinations. Discover more at viking.com.
Learn how to plan, invest, and live smarter with the Raymond James For What It's Worth podcast. Featuring insights from leading professionals, you'll get the latest in wealth management, market commentary, and engaging research. Listen today at raymondjames.com/podcast.
I'm Jace Lacob, and you're listening to Masterpiece Studio. When we last spoke with Hayter Reed after Elizabeth Warleggan's death at the end of Poldark's fourth season, she pretended like a ghostly Elizabeth was entirely out of the question. Or did she?
I don't know if I can comment on that. I know nothing. I know nothing.
Fortunately for us, Reed was only kidding. Elizabeth and Hayter Reed is a constant and surprising presence on this season of the series.
The investment is high, but so I'm told are the rewards.
Oh, the rewards. Rewards are never guaranteed. And how well do you know this man? Can he be trusted?
In his grief-stricken madness, the widowed George Warleggan is haunted by a ghostly Elizabeth who only he can see, serving as a reminder of his lost love.
Would you like me to do that, my dear? After all, it would not do to be late for the king when one is receiving a knighthood.
This version of Elizabeth, a figment of her husband's imagination, gives both viewers and George a chance to say goodbye to a complicated central character as this long-running series comes to a close. Reed joins us now to talk about how it felt to come back to set after her character's untimely death, and what it meant to say goodbye again to Elizabeth and Poldark for good. And this week we are joined by Poldark's surprise star, Hayter Reed. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
When you were told that despite being killed off last season, Elizabeth Warleggan would be returning to Poldark, what were those conversations with Debbie Horsfield and the producers like?
I feel like Debbie always had a plan for her to have some kind of a place in the last series. But I wasn't, like, no one really knew until she wrote it. And, you know, I didn't have an option to do the fifth series anyway, so it could have just evaporated. So I wasn't sure until, I think, probably just a month or two before. So, it wasn't a done deal.
I mean, when we sat down last time, I asked, we've seen that the dead can return on Poldark, at least in flashbacks. Is there any chance you might be back in season 5 for another flashback? And your response was, I don't know if I can comment on that.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know then that you'd be back in some capacity?
If I said that, I probably had an idea. I think I was waiting around that time. I think I was waiting to be told, you know, we need you back for this. And I was hoping, because it's nice to be part of the whole thing. I mean, I'm not entirely a part of the fifth season, but to be able to say that you were in 5 is quite nice since, you know, I was in it from the beginning.
Well, she is such a pivotal, important part of the show. Mm-hmm. Her death sort of hangs over things anyway, but I think having your presence on the show in that kind of ghostly vision way, I think did bring things kind of full circle for that character.
Yeah, I think it was just also very nice for, I mean, not nice for George, but nice for Jack in terms of like just getting quite a lot of interesting things to play with in that last season, and just for people to really see the sort of human, fragile side of him and how much Elizabeth really meant to him, you know, and how she was kind of his heart, you know.
Which is worse, burying a child or leaving one behind? She did not deserve her fate.
Nor did her children.
And how did you approach this version of the character as Elizabeth herself, a ghost, a vision, a figment of George's imagination, or something altogether different?
I've never thought of it as a ghost. I remember I had a lot of people always say, oh, you're going to come back as a ghost, or you're going to come back as a ghost, or even when it happened, oh, Elizabeth is a ghost. But I've never thought of it that way. And I don't think Debbie's thought of it that way. I think it's about George's mental breakdown and his actual hallucinations.
George, will you not say goodnight to your son?
Elizabeth.
Sir?
Thank you, Bessie. Good night, boy.
Good night, Papa.
He's not dealing with the death of Elizabeth, and he, in order to cope, he just sees her. So my approach to Elizabeth in those episodes were just the way that George would see her, which would be, you know, perfect and warm and, you know, just whatever he needed in that time. So there wasn't much kind of emotional background for me as the character, because I was kind of approaching it from being a figment of his imagination, basically. You know, it was all to serve his vision.
I mean, in saying that, she is this sort of sainted version of Elizabeth. Hmm. She is on this pedestal. I mean, what is the challenge then in playing someone else's conception of a character you've played for 4 years?
I think the way I approached it was just the sort of best bits of her. The stuff, because, you know, Elizabeth was very good at masks and very good at showing the world kind of what she wanted them to see. And so it was just that version. It was just kind of the best version of Elizabeth, where you don't get to see any of her fragility or weakness.
She's perfect in death.
Of course. I mean, I feel like we put people on a pedestal, whether they're passed away or whether they're not in our lives anymore. A lot of the times we think of them as, you know, saints.
What did you make of the way that the show used George's grief to engineer a way to bring Elizabeth back into the fold, both in the thematic sense and a personal one for you? I mean, it meant you being able to come back to Poldark.
Yeah, it was, well, first of all, I thought it was a beautiful way to tell a story from George's perspective, of just for him to have more humanity and to see that he truly faced with the worst thing that could ever happen to him in his life, and kind of makes him reassess everything. But for me, it was just really nice to come back because, like I said, it wasn't a done deal. They've really, truly been like family, and Jack specifically has been one of the most amazing partners I've ever worked with and ever will be, and is a very dear friend of mine. And so it was just like coming home, to be honest. People kept asking, what's it like to be back? And I was like, the same. Like, it feels the same because it feels like home, so it doesn't feel weird. Except that there were lots of new people that I'd never seen before. And I was like, oh. And I met my son, Jeffrey Charles, who's, I mean, you know, 25 or something at this point somehow.
That's hysterical. Mm. You're in these scenes, but also not in these scenes. Mm-hmm. The only character who can see you is George, which must make it complicated for other actors like Pip Torrens not to make eye contact with you if you're in their eye line or to even see you.
Yeah.
Poldark, Despard, Annis. Three men with known Jacobin sympathies.
Could be seen as hostile to the crown.
Precisely, Sir George. But two more pleasant matters.
Are you sure, George? Is this really what you wish?
Is it what I wish?
What was involved in sort of blocking those scenes and being aware of eye lines?
It was cool. What we did was put me in and out. So they sometimes would film the scene without me in order for a Pip to sort of react more naturally to the fact that there's nobody there. And then sometimes you would put me in so that they had both versions of reactions. But it was fun. It was kind of like being a fly on the wall. You know, you didn't have to be like, oh, so what's going on with us? Like, well, you know, you didn't have to have any dialogue or background. You were just kind of a spectator in your own scene. And it was quite nice. I liked it.
Before this next question, a brief word from our sponsors.
The Great Lakes, the Arctic and Antarctica, iconic destinations around the world. Viking offers opportunities for discovery with a shore excursion in every port. Learn more at viking.com.
Coming up next on Masterpiece on PBS, Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, followed by the finale of Alice and Jack at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. There's a sense that the miniature of Elizabeth that Valentine shows George is almost talismanic, that it sort of summons the restless ghost of Elizabeth. And I'm using that in air quotes here.
Papa, look what I found.
Take it away.
Papa.
Take it away!
Do you see George as being sort of in a state of denial about her death and that these hallucinations are sort of his way of coping with grief that he can't confront?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the only way of coping to begin with is to imagine she's still alive. But he's convinced himself that she is still alive, so he doesn't know that he's hallucinating or he doesn't know that he's in denial, which I think makes it all the more powerful when he realizes he's having a mental breakdown or, you know, he's not dealing with his grief.
So George resigns his MP post. He closes up Trenwith. There's a sense that George is so heartbroken by Elizabeth's death, so grief-stricken that he's lost, as you say, his sort of grip on his sanity. Mm-hmm. Why do you feel he's hit so hard by her death last season, and why do you feel he copes in the way that he does? Is it all about control for George?
I mean, yes, you're right. I mean, he needs to be in power and he needs to be in control of everything. And as much as he loves Elizabeth, I don't think he was aware of how much he needed her until she passed away. And I think there's just a slight delay of how he's feeling. And I don't think a person like George ever imagined himself in this type of situation of grief and heartbreak. And so it's just a typical example of someone who's not in touch with their emotions and emotionally articulate, and being a man and being, you know, back in those times, and also powerful, you know. So in that way, I think Debbie's done a really good job of writing it, you know, writing this type of narrative for George, because essentially I think this is what happens a lot to people who are emotionally unavailable, and especially men in power, because they don't have the wherewithal to sort of sit down and process, I think.
And to me, it also shows the fact that while this may have started out as a marriage of convenience, they end up being, by the end at least, sort of an ideal pairing. Sorry, Team Francis, but
no.
They are a much better pair, Elizabeth and George, than Elizabeth and Francis were.
Oh, yeah. I agree. And I've always said last season 4, was really fun for me and us because it was the first time that I got to play a character in that show in a happy relationship or in an exciting relationship where they were, you know, conquering the world together. And that was really fun for us because there'd been so much of the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that George harbors any sense of guilt over the way that Elizabeth died?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think that he has any way of articulating it, which is probably why it makes more sense for him to just think she's still alive. I think everybody does. I mean, you know, everyone involved in her life. I don't know about Geoffrey Charles, but I know that Ross and George definitely feel guilty for how everything has gone down.
Do you see Elizabeth's presence here as fulfilling the role of George's moral compass as his conscience?
Yes, absolutely. And she was. That's what she was to him, you know, which is, again, another component of why I enjoyed playing her so much in the last series. I always have, but there was an extra add-on when she became his kind of, for lack of a better term, Lady Macbeth. But I mean, we weren't that bad. But you know, she didn't just sit on the sidelines. You know, she was a part of his decision-making process.
It's clear George's delusions, such as they are, not going to resolve themselves immediately. What can you tease about where this Elizabeth storyline might be going this season?
I think that people will see an escalation in his delusions. And for Elizabeth, I mean, she's just a figment of his imagination, so that's up to George when he lets go of that. And whether he does, you'll have to watch and see.
Can we expect to see more of you in the next few episodes?
You can expect to.
What do you feel it would take for George to truly say goodbye to Elizabeth, to put her ghost to rest, as it were?
I mean, the first thing is obviously to deal with grief and to recognize the loss that he's had, and to sort of come to terms with the things that he feels guilty about. I can't imagine how people dealt with all these things before it was kind of acceptable to talk about. And, you know, the British on top of it. I mean, it's nuts how repressed these people must have been. I think those two things are the steps to sort of get back to normal and then maybe find someone else.
You had a going-away dinner when you shot your final scene in season 4 and were presented with the vial of ergot that Elizabeth used to seal her doom.
Uh-huh.
When you wrapped this season, was there a similar parting gift?
This one? No. This one was, as much as I felt like I was still a part of it and I kind of, you know, felt like I was home, I also was just kind of nipping in and out, and they were in the middle of filming. And when people are in the middle of filming, they're sort of just kind of get on with it, you know. And I was fully expecting that. I felt very much like a guest, kind of a reoccurring guest role, rather than someone, you know, who was like in every episode.
What did it mean then to say goodbye to the character of Elizabeth Warleggan all over again, albeit in a rather strange way, where you're not the character you played for 4 years, but rather someone else's idealization of her?
I think I'd gone through all that stuff. Like, I think I'd gone through the fact that I was done. You know, like you said, we had my dinner. We said the goodbyes. I got the cards and the presents and everything. And so in my mind, I was done, you know. This was just a lovely little visit. It's like your childhood home, and then you drive by just to say, like, I used to live there. That's kind of how it was for me. It wasn't bittersweet, though, because it didn't, you know, it was the next year. So it didn't really feel like I'd been away, because they'd only been filming for maybe a month before. But it's also something that I did for a long time, you know, every year. So, yeah, had I come back like 3 years later, I bet it would have been very nostalgic and bittersweet. But I think there hadn't been enough time passed in order for me to sort of have all the feels, you know. But it's interesting to see now, you know, now that everyone's done, I can sort of tell that they're going through some of the stuff that I went through last year of just like, damn, like, what do I do now? What happens now?
What interests me about this version of Elizabeth is that she is this figment of George's imagination, seen through his eyes, and therefore lacking any real agency.
Yeah.
She's an extension of his self,
essentially.
I mean, did you struggle at all with the notion of this imaginary Elizabeth's sense of agency?
No. I think it was always very clear from Debbie's perspective who Elizabeth was to George, and I never had any issue sort of stepping into that role. It wasn't really about me, you know, it wasn't really about me. It wasn't about her. I was just there to kind of serve a purpose.
Facilitate.
Yeah, exactly.
And in addition to Bjork, Sigur Rós, and maybe Skyr, which I have for breakfast every morning, you might be Iceland's most popular export. Do you feel it's time for Iceland to play a bigger part in that global cultural conversation?
I mean, the fact that there's only 300,000 of us, and we already have, you know, like you said, Sigur Rós and Bjork, which most people know about, just the fact that we have two world-famous music experts is pretty amazing. So, I think that we're doing loads of stuff. And there's a few other actors out there, even some that are doing much, much bigger things. And I'm really proud to be one of them. And the fact that there's not many of us and we're still kind of on the world stage is pretty cool. And I think it's just going to grow now, like I said, because people are more open to other stuff now.
Ada Reed, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Coming up next on Masterpiece Studio, we go straight to Elizabeth's widower, George Warleggan, still suffering from his wife's untimely death. Can George find peace, or will the memory of his dead wife continue to torment him forever?
Oh, George, what are you doing? How will that serve any of us?
It will serve me to be rid of that thief.
Put the pistol down, George.
Compose yourself, George. What have I stolen?
Poldark star Jack Farthing joins us next Sunday, October 13th. Masterpiece Studio is hosted by me, Jace Lacob, and produced by Nick Anderson. Alicia Baitoop is our editor. Suzanne Simpson is our executive producer. The executive producer of Masterpiece is Rebecca Eaton. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking Cruises, Raymond James, and the Masterpiece Trust. Masterpiece Studio is officially a Webby Awards nominee for 2024. We are honored to be considered among such talented competition, but we need your vote. Head over to vote.webbyawards.com and vote for Masterpiece Studio in the podcast section, where you'll find us listed in the general television and film category. Voting closes Thursday, April 18th, so be sure to get your vote in soon. That's vote.webbyawards.com. Thank you.